You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You are listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. On tonight's episode, we have Chain of Command Part 2. Hi, I'm Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast and the Soulforge Podcast, and I was here last week.
So it's me, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Okay, Luke, Chains just make sure you London. Cut it out.
Chains from London.
Yes. So the problem is that I found something that really wants me to go on a tangent, but I will not do this until we finish the episode, and then we can do a tangent afterwards.
Okay.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Oh, let's see. Sean, I can't believe you're here again.
I know it doesn't feel like it's been a week, but I guess it has been. Oh.
In the last 7 days,
a lot of podcasting, I'd imagine. A lot of delivering the mail, and living the dream always.
And you haven't gotten bit by a dog in the last 7 days?
No, definitely not.
Oh, good. But it's probably coming now that I've jinxed you.
Probably. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm, no problem. You've what?
Carry on, Lou.
Oh, okay. So, tonight we're here about Chain of Command Part 2. You're right, you have. I'm going to have to get that solved.
Can we get you... Lou, I don't trust your editing skills to make this in any way smooth.
Definitely not.
What?
Yeah, you should surely definitely you never trust that. All right, Sean in Timmins, Ontario. But yeah, I don't know what to ask you that we didn't ask you last week.
How about ask me where people can find my podcasts that they should be listening to? How about that?
Oh yeah, therustedrobot.podbean.com
or www.soulforgepodcast.com for all of our episodes and social media links.
Yes, that's it.
That's what you wanted to ask me.
I knew I could figure it out eventually.
You're a smart man.
Sean, I think last week you threatened, and I think it was off air, you threatened that you would bring me onto the Soulforge podcast.
Yes.
What would we talk about on that podcast? It's not sci-fi, right?
No, that's the one that's about life, the universe, and everything. We could talk about whatever you like. I've talked about dating. I've talked about first-time sex. I've talked about loss. I've interviewed Daniel Peter Hitch and Paul Wright about various things that they've been into. I interviewed a guy from Australia who wanted to be a rap star. I've talked about...
I think one of the problems here is that I'm very, very boring.
Oh.
And I don't know what anyone would want to hear from me.
We could talk about what it's like being a doctor as well as what it's
really
like
boring.
Managing, five kids or six kids now?
Six kids? Are you crazy?
It's five. Right? Yeah, because six would be crazy. Five is...
It'd be absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us talk in a year or so.
I've been told it's over.
Have you been told, or has there been snips in your fast?
without wanting to get too personal here, if I were to be able to find myself like a second wife, then indeed more may indeed come. But there has been an agreement that we are done.
Fair enough.
So it's an agreement. It's a gentleman's handshake.
Well, rather you know than what? A, a gentleman's handshake with your wife.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, we'll come up with a topic for Soulforge that we could have an episode about.
It's kind of like what Ben Straw and Byer Brown used to do with the Road of I and We. They just kind of basically just went into life and whatnot. And I miss that dynamic podcast they used to have. And I haven't talked to Byer Brown in years, so I don't know if you guys know who I'm talking about at all. But
not a clue.
Okay. Yeah, you can look him up. Byer Brown. And okay. Well, I put in the show notes, but I left out the synopsis, so I redid it, and you got some synopsis this time.
This is the 11th episode of season 6. What?
Go to the next one down.
Oh, there's more. Okay.
The synopsis. There you go.
Okay. The synopsis for tonight's show is Captain Picard's secret mission fails, leading to him being captured by Cardassians. As he is tortured by his captors, Captain Jellicoe and the Enterprise attempt to prevent war with the Cardassian Union. This right here is the 11th episode of Season 6 of Star Trek, The Next Generation. The original release date for this episode was December 21st, 1992. As was the first episode, this was written by Frank Abbott Tim Marco, and directed by Les Landau. Guest stars include Ronnie Cox as Dick Jones, John Durbin as Lamech, David Warner as Gal Madred, Heather Lauren Olson as Jill Ora, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. Is it Barrett, or Barrett? How do we say her name anyway? Barrett.
Majel Barrett.
Okay. What do we think of this week's episode, guys?
Oh. That's right. I need to have the second one up here. James, you start there. Sean, you first.
Me first. Okay, because I'm the guest host, right? So I have to put in my two cents. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can do that. I think this episode is slightly better than last week's episode, which I think I mentioned last week on that episode that we recorded, that everybody's already listened to. But it's still, the first one was great. This one's excellent. And we get a lot of torture scenes. We get a lot of cool lines and very quotable dialogue. We get to meet our Cardassian child, see some disgusting egg yolk type things. Mm-hmm. We get to have Jellicoe and Riker spar off about who gets to be flying the mission. It's great.
Mm. And you forgot Picard's ass.
Oh, yes. How could I forget that? That's burned into my memory.
Yeah, we got Picard's ass. He definitely isn't, you know, keeping those glutes firm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay. All right, then.
What do you think? Good episode? Me? No? Nah. Pretty crappy?
You know, last week was a build-up to a very good show. I do like this more. We already know James didn't, but we'll let him not burst his bubble. Okay, so this episode, I think, has some very dark overtones to it, too. You know, we don't normally see somebody actually tortured in Star Trek.
True.
Especially not our captain. And that's what we see. It's pretty dim, and I'm sure somewhere along the line somebody has either edited this one for use in somebody's country that isn't going to allow torture to be put on the show. But it's still so good. It is so good. You know, it's simply pretty much the most of it deals with the interrogation of Picard, and like we keep saying, it just includes a lot of torture. And what the Borg didn't do to him, the Cardassians will. All right. So, Dr. Roberts.
Hello.
How about you?
What do you want from me?
What do you think of this episode?
I think it's great. I think this is great. I think it's a satisfactory conclusion to the story. Sometimes you have a bit of a come down in part two because part one, the job is to build it up, and you can, you know, you can leave a lot of threads that can't physically possibly be answered by part two. So part two kind of has a job to land. It, you know, part one gets a plane in the air. Part two has to land the plane, and all of the tension that's built up potentially can't be can't be resolved satisfactory. But I think they do a really good job in this episode. I think it's very good in terms of both landing what has been set up in part one, but also I think all of the stuff around, and I'm sure we're going to speak about it, about the relationship between captor and captive, is very unique, and it's not very often that they do this kind of story. You know, it's a bit of a hard left in terms of the direction of travel, but I really enjoy it. It's clearly, you know, great acting and a greatly written story as well. I'm going to be very positive with this. I generally think both part one and part two are good.
Okay. Well, at this point, I am going to put in a previously on Star Trek The Next Generation. I believe they do that at the beginning of every episode, so why not do it here?
Yeah, do it. Do it up.
And I'm definitely going to have to edit this whole thing.
Indeed.
All right. So, as we leave off last week's episode with Picard, Crusher, and Worf penetrating a Cardassian installation to destroy their metagenic weapon control, and they find nothing. Picard is captured, and from there, here we go. First, how about a little truth serum?
You know, that never works. Torture is a very inefficient way of getting information.
So they say. And he really didn't know much about it either. Didn't have anything to answer. Except for his mother's name was Yvette. Was that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Yvette. And Maurice, right? And was I the only person that Googled Le Bar France? And it's got like 100 people living there. It's tiny.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really, 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 really small.
Oh.
Yeah. So I would imagine that Picard's the most famous person to come out of that place, even on the grounds that it's fictitious.
Okay. I would like to know how truth serum works and where I can find some.
It works very well, thank you very much.
Mm. Well, I want to find some. I want to, you know, slip a little into my daughter's Dr. Pepper, and then I'll be able to know when she's lying. Actually, I know when she's lying. There's a very good way to know. Teenagers don't even realize the clue they give off when they're lying. You know what that is? When their mouth is moving.
Aha! I see what you did there.
When a teenager talks, especially to explain something, it's a lie. James, you're going to be there one day.
What do you mean? I've got a 15-year-old.
You had a 15-year-old?
Yeah.
Boy or girl?
Girl.
Does she lie about everything?
Okay, so I'm going to now come in defend the Generation Z members. I think you're being very harsh on our younger listeners, Lou. You were a teenager once. Don't hassle teenagers. And teenagers, don't trust anyone over 30.
Never trust anybody with two first names.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
you know, if John Michael,
like if your last name was Robert instead of Roberts, you'd be in trouble.
Yeah, but doesn't that like? I mean, okay, no,
it's just the same. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. But is it? Yeah, but that targets a certain demographic of people, right?
It does,
in a way that you might not necessarily wish to target. Anyway, doesn't matter. Moving on.
So yeah, this is a pretty good episode, right?
Maybe that's another tangent after the show, because I have no idea what you mean by that. But, I mean, I've seen people with three names. You know, Michael, Martin, Patrick, or something like that.
Right. Oh, usually what's it? Isn't it like a really high case of serial killers having like a triplet name?
Oh, geez, I don't know. Okay, it's time to lie to the Cardassians again. Wait. Do you believe that Gull, whatever his name is, claims that Picard's team killed over 55 men, women, and children? Did I miss that part?
No, that happened. It was pretty horrific, actually.
Wow. Well, I had no idea. But what about pets? Because if they kill any animals, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be pissed, especially dogs.
No, they kill any dogs. They kill 17 voles.
Oh, that's all right. Who cares about a vole? I mean, they're going to be a pain in the ass to O'Brien in the future, so. But, you know, pets have to count for something. Okay. Here's a pet peeve. I don't know if I've ever discussed this before. But when alien races use the word Earth, but not to call Earth by its name, the Cardassian says some artifacts were unearthed. That bothers me.
Oh, it shouldn't.
Unearthed?
Yeah, but what? So here's the thing. The etymology of the planet comes from... It surely... Think of it as in Earth is the dirt stuff, and then what do you call the planet full of the dirt stuff? Well, you call it Earth. So the base word is Earth as in the dirt.
So it's Earth on Earth.
So unearthed is a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
So they wouldn't say un-Cardassianed?
Of course they wouldn't. That's ridiculous.
Undirted.
But no, I think the bigger problem is that there are certain things in the world that, certain things in Trek that have either an explicit dependency on Earth or an implicit dependency on Earth. So when you say things like hours, what's an hour? Well, an hour is really an Earth hour, right? It's defined by a day is also defined as in an Earth day. And then other things as well that people may not be aware of, but I think I've brought this up before, but a parsec, it's an Earth parsec. There's a difference between what a parsec is on Cardassia and a parsec is on Earth, because it's defined relative to the orbit of the Earth around the Sun. Now, coincidentally, they might be the same number, but that would be coincidental. But I always find it odd that when... sometimes you have it in bad sci-fi movies, they'll say, you have one Earth hour. But no one ever says Earth parsec, even though parsec is just as connected to Earth as the hour is.
It's true.
Okay.
I give you two of your Earth minutes.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right, so it's not going to be un-Cardassed. It's going to be unearthed.
Correct. But this all goes through the Universal Translator, right? Isn't this what we just assume happens so that we don't have to worry about these kind of things?
That's right. We know how all that works, so it's nothing to worry about.
Sometimes. However, we have seen many times like two Cardassians talking to each other in front of a human in... Oh, no, no. Well, Cardassians, or Klingon mostly, but in Klingonese is what they used to call it. Talking to each other in Klingon. Why doesn't why wouldn't the translator just translate it automatically? Plus another thing, why does the translator change the style of their lip movement to English?
These are questions we'll never answer.
Good, so let's just go on.
Yeah, so what happened in this episode?
They strip Picard, and then they hook him up to a device to keep him upright. You believe that?
I don't believe it.
They did.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay.
Back on the ship, it looks like Riker's not getting his rescue mission. Sorry, Will. Not going to happen.
I can't believe you'd abandon the captain like that.
Yeah. You're relieved of duty. He actually relieves Riker of duty.
Yeah. Good.
Yes,
So that makes Data, the new first officer.
We have Redshirt Data.
Redshirt Data.
So Data doesn't look good in red.
No.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's his jaundice, but he just doesn't look good in red.
No, he doesn't.
No, he did not. No, he didn't. So back on the Cardassian ship, because we keep going back and forth. What kind of coffee cup was he drinking out of? It looked like a snow cone upside down. Or it looked like a snow cone cup is what it looked like.
In a fancy holder.
Yes, he had to have a fancy holder because he can't set it down anywhere. Because it falls over every time.
That's inefficient.
It is. Plus it doesn't hold as much liquid. Why would he want that? He has to keep filling it up more and more.
Well, it's kind of like a Viking drinking horn, I guess. You need a special stand for those as well.
I guess maybe it does.
So there are human precedents for these kind of things.
Okay.
So does anyone have a Viking drinking horn?
I almost ordered one.
No.
I almost did, but they were too expensive.
So I'm just looking here. I am in the kitchen at the moment. I don't have a Viking drinking horn, but in terms of the most inappropriate or useless thing to drink out of, I do have a rather large replica of Olaf the snowman from Frozen's head that each of the kids have. That again, it's not a particularly good vessel to drink out of, and it's a real pain in the backside to put away and store efficiently. So I'm not going to criticize the Kardashian on this one.
Okay, that's fair.
You can get a Viking drinking horn on Amazon for $38.99 here.
Is that right?
$29.99 for this one. Yeah.
Oh, you know what though? You're looking up American prices, and you have to add 30% for Canadian prices, and then it costs more to ship to Canada. So you know.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, you and your first world country over there.
I know. Yeah, well, anyway.
I can't see
Russia on a clear day.
With your Mego action figures at the corner store and all the stuff you guys get that we don't have here.
Yeah, I still don't even know what that means, Mego. Okay, it's time for the lights now.
How many?
Four lights or five lights? We don't know. It could be four, it could be five. Now, having said that, in my bathroom, above my mirror, in my what do you call it?
Luxury water closet?
Yes. In my water closet, which, yeah, I don't know why you would call it a water closet, but...
We call it the loo.
Yes. How many times does your wife have to say, James, come out of the closet?
So about these lights above your bathroom sink there, what may
happen one day. No. Okay, so I was looking at my lights, those lights up there. And what's really funny, the way my eyes are, as I was looking at it, I only see out of one eye specifically, and the other eye is more like peripheral.
Uh-huh.
So as I'm looking at it, I can actually
see. So is this in general or when you're looking at the lights?
In general. I can actually see a fifth light when you look at it long enough. It's really strange how it works out.
You've been tortured too much.
I've been tortured way too much. No, my eyes are funky, and I can see out of my right eye mainly. But I can also switch to where I'm not looking out of my left eye.
I have a question.
Huh?
What are the Federation's defense plans for Minos Corva?
I don't know. You're going to have to give me some truth serum to get to that.
I'm going to make you hang upside down naked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might have to. Okay, anyway, it's obvious there's only four lights. So, what do you think the point was of trying to make him believe that there is actually five?
Psychological torture.
So the thing I thought about, and maybe I'm being completely naive here, is that would a better method here would have just been to say, yeah, sure, there are five lights. Moving on.
Right.
Does that not just completely disempower the other guy?
Yeah, but then you don't get the Emmy Award-winning performance of Picard telling him how many lights there are at the end.
Or maybe he moves on to saying, I'm afraid, Picard, there are six lights. And he can keep on going.
Oh, yeah.
You're wrong. There are 28 lights.
47.
There's four there. Five, six, seven. As you look around the room, 8, 9, 10, 11. What do you want? But you know, he could have said, yeah, okay. There are five lights. Moving on, and still came back at the end with four. I think he could have done that. What would the guy have done? How many lights do you see? There are five lights. I'm sorry, but wait a minute. What'd you say? Five lights?
Well, also, can I ask? This episode seems to treat the fact that there's truth serum as a thing that works.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true in Trek? 'Cause I never felt that was true. I always felt that you couldn't get information out of people. Because if you can, then why didn't you just keep doing this? Why doesn't the Federation use serum in order to get the truth out of people that it captures?
It's inhumane.
Is it?
Sure. Like, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. It's not nice. I mean, why don't we have a cloaking device? That was the stupidest thing ever.
Well, because of the Treaty of Algeron.
Exactly. Do you think the treaty would have gone any different had we developed our own cloak? So, how does this go? Okay, we agree. You can keep your cloaking technology against us. And we also agree that we will not develop a cloaking technology against you. We agreed on that?
Luke, let me just step back here a second.
Okay.
There are plenty of countries in the world that are not allowed to develop nuclear weapons and are signed up to treaties with the US on the proviso that the US has nuclear weapons and other countries don't have nuclear weapons and can't develop them, right? So, you know, whether it's Japan, whether it's Germany, any of the countries that lost during the Second World War, these countries entered into an agreement that would have prevented them having any strategic power as you left the war and you went into, like, you know, the new age afterwards. So what you're saying here is it happens on Earth. Hello?
There you are. It happens on Earth is the last thing I heard.
Yeah. So it happens. I mean, you know, you enter into agreement, you've got, you know, you're on the back foot. You have to enter into an agreement, because otherwise, whilst the Federation is hanging around trying to figure out how to develop a cloak, they're being wiped out by the Romulans or the Klingons or whoever.
Okay, see. All right, then tell me, what treaty kept England from landing on the moon first?
They didn't try.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, let those two idiots do it. We'll watch it on TV instead.
On the telly.
I mean, as long as you've paid your taxes.
Hey, hang on a second, Sean. Do you guys not have a TV license?
No, we have to pay monthly for our cable subscription.
Yeah,
and that's
normal.
You just go to the store and buy a TV and plug it in and use it.
They have to have a license.
Do you have any kind of public service broadcasting in Canada?
Yeah, the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. That's free.
We have PBS. That's free.
Is there ads on CBC?
Yeah, I think so. I don't ever watch it, but yeah.
Okay.
No ads on PBS.
So how does it get funded then? The government funds it?
Yep, that's it.
And
advertising and stuff.
So the thing, like I said, the way things work in the UK is that the BBC, which is our public service broadcasting corporation, out here and has been for, you know, well over 100 years or so, initially in radio, they do not take advertising. So the question becomes, how do you fund it? And the decision that was made, and this goes back a long, long time ago, is that you don't want the government to be in charge of funding levels for broadcasters. Because it then gets into a political discussion as to would you show bias if there's a more favorable program between party A versus party B? Do you use as a political football, et cetera, et cetera? So effectively, having taxes flow into public broadcasting is something that you try to step out of. So you have this, kind of one step removed situation where effectively you buy a TV license directly, and it bypasses kind of, you know, central funding from the Treasury for public service broadcasting.
And it's like a monthly fee or a yearly fee?
Yearly fee. It makes sense. There's nothing wrong with it.
What does it cost?
£145.50 a year.
Okay, so that's like $200 Canadian.
Something like that. Well, okay. Wow. I'm not sure.
And is that for every TV in your house?
No, you pay it on a property basis. So you pay for, you can have however many TVs you wish. You can watch however much TV you wish. But it's a flat fee for any house receiving television.
And I've seen YouTube videos about that as well, where the constables come by some guy's house to find out if he has a television in there because he hasn't paid his license. It's actually on YouTube.
I mean, realistically, people don't enforce the TV license. So I think it's unheard of for people to be taken to court for a non-payment. It's just basically an agreement that people have.
Wow.
And you still...
But you wouldn't do that.
And you still have your monthly cable subscription fee, right?
Yeah. I mean, in addition to that, if you want to... by the way, I mean, I think nowadays cable is... So cable never really took off in the UK as much. We kind of... You know, our wave came with the satellite broadcasting. And there's a very, very large dominant satellite TV provider in the UK that doesn't, which is obviously the Sky Network or BSkyB. They have the thing that they have, and I don't know if this is true in America or Canada, but they own both the delivery, so the sending of the stuff over satellite, but they also own the content as well. So they secured all of the rights to things like the football, all of the movies kind of thing. So they kind of locked down a lot of stuff. And when you have like your cable providers for a very, very long time were in a position where they really didn't have access to the same quality of content. So if you've locked down content and then you tie the content to a delivery mechanism, you have effectively locked down everything. So we don't really have this concept that you have multiple cable providers providing a large number of content providers, and there's any competition. It's really a single content provider in the UK.
Gotcha.
But that's really all now. The big thing that's changing now is all to do on the streaming side, where effectively I think both in terms of television and in terms of movies, it hasn't happened for sports. But it's all going streaming now. So effectively, you're bypassing the delivery mechanism, guys, whether it's cable or whether it's satellite.
Okay.
Who choosing to hear this nonsense?
Right. Let's talk about Star Trek.
So the Cardassian torturer's daughter comes to visit. Why would he have brought her in? And she's got her little pet in a bubble. What do you think that little pet is? Ferret of some kind?
Yeah, like a ferrety thing.
Oh. Well, apparently he might be a little sick and she has to take care of him. And she's even wearing what looks like a Cardassian uniform.
Weird.
Yes. Yeah, humans don't love their children like Cardassians do. God, poor girl. Well, that isn't something Picard would have said.
I actually think that this was very telling, right? Because the way in which that message was put across to the child, obviously, you know, as a viewer and as a human, and also probably as a human with parents, you probably think, well, that's not true. But I think it's actually a very clever thing that was mentioned, and I think it's nicely written in that this is exactly what happens, right? Whenever there's a conflict and you're prepared to torture and prepared to see the other as being unhuman, for want of a better word in this particular context.
Yeah, dehumanize.
You do dehumanize them, and you do then start saying that, well, you know, it can go back to whatever war you look at. You know, yes, they don't have the same values as we do. They don't have the same, you know, the same things that you take for granted. And you might even be able to see empathy in your values with animals even, but you wouldn't be able to see the connection to other, you know, to in this case, the humans. So actually, I thought it was a very kind of, it was a very minor couple of lines that were written, but I kind of thought that it really encapsulated what people really should always be very, very cautious of in dehumanizing the other. And this can happen on, you know, whether it's cultural or political or nationalistic divides. Anyway, so I like this. That is what I'm saying.
It was good to build up the characterization.
Okay. All right. So never, ever, ever talk ill of a Cardassian's child. You'll get slapped across the face for it. But now back to the lights. How many? Four? Oh, you silly human. Minos Corva. In 1 hour. Aye, sir. Wasn't there a planet Minos?
Yeah, that was the Arsenal of Freedom. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about that.
Mm-mm. Nope. Okay. More torture. Until Picard is dreaming of home and his Sunday dinner. The Picard family. Voices raised in song. Oh, and by the way, you can leave now. Yeah, we're not going to get anything out of you. Go ahead, we'll get you clean clothes. We'll return you to the ship. And just as he's walking out the door, he's told that somebody else gets to take his place.
Yeah, we'll get
Dr. Crusher.
We'll get what we need from the woman, the human female.
From the human female. Even though she would know about 100 times less than what Picard knows. So what does he do? He turns around and goes back and sits down for more torture.
Are you choosing to stay?
You choosing to stay? Because he doesn't know that Beverly and Worf are already back on the ship to resume their terrible jobs.
So I think this was stupid. I think Picard shouldn't have done this. Because he knows the reverse psychology that's being used, right? He knows that this is a trick that he would be, that the Kardashian would pull. And I think that given, you know, obviously Picard doesn't want to leave people behind. And he also doesn't want to walk out and leave his, you know, juniors facing a greater threat. But fundamentally, he has to consider the information coming at this time to be unreliable at best.
For sure, but he can't know for sure. So he can't make the choice just in case.
Yeah, but then why did he leave at the end, right? He left. He also left at the end.
Well, because by that point, he knew, because the other guy had said.
There was just part of this I just didn't quite... I mean, maybe had this been, like, almost immediate, maybe this had been... Had this been, like, the first day, then possibly you can still think that, you know, maybe if he's still waiting for that, you know, that independent... neutral planet observer to come over. Right. Had he not cottoned onto the fact, but when I watched it, I just thought that he was too far in, and he must have been aware of the games that were being played to have that. I felt that it was slightly out of character for him to, like, you know, walk back and, you know, not leave.
But he was also broken psychologically too.
Oh yeah, sure, sure. I understand that.
So, and it's a 45-minute episode. You have to hurry up.
Yeah, just get back, sit down. So, Picard is offered what looks like an egg. A boiled Tespa egg. Whatever's inside, it's still moving. Kind of like, gah. And Picard looks at it and goes, ugh. But what's he do? He chugs it on down.
Well, yeah, he was starving.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would have done. I don't know if I could have eaten.
You would have.
I suppose so. So, the Cardassian is dumb. he actually tells a story about him being bullied. Now, you know something? I think that says something, because I think people who are bullied actually become bullies themselves. It's pretty obvious.
Some do.
Yep. So now, when Picard looks at his torturer, he doesn't see a Cardassian warrior, but a 6-year-old boy who is powerless to protect himself. Oh, boy. Oh, snap, as they say. The lights come on, and the torture continues. While Picard is cutting him down to make him feel powerless. That's a pretty damn good scene, actually.
It was.
So I also think that this isn't just used for, as a way of stating that, you know, the powerful also at one point was powerless. I think that this kind of, this also allows Picard to realize that the person on the other end, you know, of the punishment is, I mean, I'm going to use the word human being, but obviously he's not a human being, he's a Cardassian, but he is just another, kind of, you know, an ordinary person. You know, he grew up, he had his experiences, you know, I think that there would be, it would not, you might not consider it to be unfair that if Picard started to think of this person as being inhuman himself and somehow kind of, you know, reject the fact that he has kids or that he had a childhood and stuff and only see it through kind of the prism of the torture. And I think that the story itself allows Picard to again, kind of like, you know, keep one hand on the idea that this indeed was another person that had his own experience, had his own suffering. And I think that allows you to keep the relationship on a different level.
Okay, so those mines that we discussed earlier, they're loading them onto a shuttle. And am I the only one who thought, oh, that's terrible. They're just kind of like propping them up against a couch. Like they're not just going to fall all over the place when the shuttle starts rocking.
Well, hang on, how did we get here? Isn't this a jump forward?
No, I mean, no. I don't think so. Picard cuts down the Cardassian by letting him know he's just a bully, and then the next shot is Jellicoe in a shuttle with Geordi loading up those mines,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and they're just propping them up against a couple couches.
Well, I mean, I think first of all, you have to kind of hope that the inertial dampeners are working well today.
I hope so,
because otherwise you're hiring for a bit of a trouble. I mean, there was the discussion from Jellicoe that he didn't want to acknowledge that Picard was captured and was working for the Federation. I thought that was a bit of that call was probably above his pay. I would have thought he would have had to have gone back to the Admiral for that, unless, of course, he'd been given orders ahead of time. But I kind of... You're kind of given this negative view of Jellicoe and not taking kind of ownership of what has happened. But I do like that he does try to seek out a way to rectify it, which is, okay, you know, what do we think is happening here? Do we think that there's the fleet? Do we need to get the mines ready? And, you know, eventually, of course, he has to reach out to Riker in order to execute the plan. But I kind of felt that the captain himself was behaving in a positive manner to try to kind of, you know, solve the problem that they find themselves in, rather than just being a complete antagonist as a character.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So while they're in the shuttle, Geordi happens to mention that you're going to need one hell of a pilot to pull this off. And I suppose that's you, huh? No, I could do it, but no, the man you want is Commander Riker. So Jellicoe gets to tuck his tail between his legs and walk into Riker's quarters and bag him. That was sweet. Then you can ask me. I don't remember. Does he actually make him say please?
No.
No. ask me. And as soon as he gets a yes, he runs out of there real quickly.
Oh, yeah, with his tail between his legs.
Uh-huh. Thinking, I got one over on Riker. Oh, and while they're together, let's drop ranks for a little bit. I don't like you. You're something. You're this, you're that, you're that, you're this. Oh, really? Well, since the ranks are dropped, I don't like you either. You're this and this and that and this. That was pretty awesome. And then just as Jellicle walks out, I believe Riker stops and says, "You're welcome." Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, Riker and Geordi head out and they bounce around like crazy. They're in some kind of, you know, obviously they're in the nebula.
The McAllister Nebula.
Yeah, that's right. McAllister.
You know.
That one.
Mm-hmm.
Is it right where they left it?
It is.
Last time we were there? I don't remember being there before, but it bounces. Oh, yeah. And there's another thing. Tell me, if the dampeners were online, when they had a big jolt, and Riker or Geordi almost falls off his feet, how'd those canisters stay up?
Straps.
Must have been. Okay. So they get those canisters all going. They lay their minds out. They deploy them into the nebula where the Cardassian ships are waiting. Time to let the Cardassians know what's going to happen.
On screen.
What do you want, human? Oh, here, guess what? Kaboom! Takes the wind out of their sails, doesn't it?
It does.
Give back Picard, leave the area, or we're going to blow you all up. Cool, alright. So Picard wakes up, finds his torture device that's sitting on the table, how reckless it was to leave it there, and busts it up. But that's okay, I'm sure he's got more. And he's told the Enterprise is burning in space. The Cardassians won.
So you have a choice.
Yeah, what's a choice?
Well, you can live a luxury life with women and food.
Song and philosophy.
Or you can stay here and get tortured. What do I have?
All he has to do is...
Tell me, how many lights do you see?
And it's got to be 5. And he sits there and he thinks about it and thinks about it and thinks about it. And just as he's about to say 5 lights, the guards bust in and tell him to stop the torture. He needs to be dressed to go back to his ship.
And that's when it all falls into place for Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the best line, the best performance in 6 seasons of The Next Generation. There are 4 lights. You cannot hurt me.
The full lights. I think I'd try to do it as best I can, but I can't do Picard.
No, that's pretty difficult.
No, that is very difficult. So, Picard is back on the ship. They gave him back and kicks Jellicoe on out. So long. Oh, yeah, that's right. The swearing in ceremony. We have another. There's no ceremony. It was just right on the bridge. Yeah, he can have it back. I'm leaving.
I'll see myself out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, bye, Will. You give me a hug, you big boy.
We're gonna be friends on Facebook, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's already sent out his friend request to Will.
Of course.
Yes. Oh, yeah, there's one more thing before we have to go. Counselor, please join me. So this is interesting here, because obviously Picard is broken. I mean, he is broken.
Again.
And he's going to need a lot of help.
Again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he says what he didn't put in his report is that at the end, he could actually begin to see that there were 5 lights. Wow.
So how much... after Picard getting back is this? Is this like a week or... Because when I watched the episode, I kind of like felt like this was on the day. He kind of got back to the Enterprise and it's like, okay, Captain, you take over now. And I kind of like thought that, you know, Starfleet must have some really shoddy kind of like, you know, mental health support mechanisms.
It seems like it.
You know, first of all, he comes back from the Borg. He's still got the tubes hanging out of his face and he's told to get back to work. Now he's come back from torture and he kind of like stumbles onto the bridge. And it sounds like the first interaction he's had with the counselor is after he's taken over command. It's like, hey, counselor, just to be aware that, things aren't good at the moment. I mean, there's not exactly a huge amount of pastoral care going on here.
No, but it does feel like 2 or 3 days since all that happened.
So
it feels like it. Or at least I choose to believe.
And that should be enough. What is he, a wimp?
That's right.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's interesting. So, I don't know. This is a good one. What did I skip?
That's about it.
Although we did go fast.
We did, but it's 2 episodes, so.
Okay, good. All right then, guys. Once again, it is time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And so, Sean, go ahead and finish us out.
I will finish you guys off by saying that this is one of the most excellent episodes of The Next Generation. It's got great dramatic scenes. It's, I don't know, it's got quotes, it's got this, it's got that. What can you say other than I have to give it 5 out of 5 lights? The other day on
you mean 5 out of 4 lights?
Yes, 5 out of 4 lights. It deserves it. He wasn't nominated for an Emmy, but he should have been. It's a great scene. It really shows off Patrick Stewart's acting chops. I still say whenever anybody says there are. You know, they're going to talk about something. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, there are 3 cars over there, or there are reasons for this. As soon as I say there are, I always say 4 lights. It's just automatic. It's like, never give up, never surrender, you know, when somebody says never. So, I have to give it 5 out of 5, 5 out of 4, whatever you want to call it. It's almost perfect episode. And my parting thoughts is... if she doesn't know how many lights there are, she's too young for you, bro. Your turn. Okay. Your turn.
Yeah, I gotta consume that a little bit longer. Okay.
As in, if you meet someone in reality,
yes,
and you ask them how many lights, and they say, "I don't know," then she's not worth.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's not a Trekkie,
right?
Got it. Okay, for me, this is a great episode. And it seems to be pretty clear, but it kind of gives you a pretty good indication of what the Bajorans went through during the occupation as well. Obviously, Cardassians are just, you know, pigs all the way around the line. To break Picard down this much was truly amazing. I mean, they took his manhood away. It's such an amazing episode. The torture was rather graphic. And for Cardassian to bring his child into the room to see what he was doing, I think that's sad. I don't care what he says. I think that would traumatize her to see that, what's going on. So I think it was a pretty questionable thing to do. Even for the young actress to come and walk in and see him like that, I mean, they had to have obviously prepared her for to see that, and unless she's... She is a good actress. She knows Hollywood is what it is. So for this one, I'm giving this a solid 100 watt light bulbs in Picard's face out of 5. Doc?
Do you guys still have 100 watt light bulbs?
No, not really.
Yeah, not really. I still have some because I bought a bunch before they stopped making them. But... Yeah.
You know. I mean, yeah. I don't think we've had them for a decade or so.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah, we got these curly cues now.
Yeah, yeah.
They try to get us to give. Anyway. Yeah, they say 65 watts, but it only uses 15. Bullshit. Next, Doctor.
Okay, 5 out of 5. Great episode. Everything is good. I enjoyed this. It's obviously a very different episode than the first episode. I think it obviously touches on a lot of the good things in terms of the performance and the writing. It's all great. I like how Jellicoe kind of solves his problems. I don't think he does get a comeuppance, which I appreciate, because I think that although he's a slight antagonist in the storyline, I do think I can really see his point of view and where he's coming from, and I think it would have been a disservice had he been kind of shown to be a fool or kind of portrayed in a very bad way in the second episode. I think overall, yeah, okay. He has to ask Riker something, and Riker kind of says, "You're welcome." But beyond that, it's not as if he gets, he doesn't get killed and eaten by the Cardassians. Overall, I'm kind of very happy with this episode. It's all great. I like the fact that it's also, you move in to DS9, and I think DS9's technically, I think it technically goes before it, or it's around the same time, but you kind of see a lot of things they put in place in this episode with the Cardassians, used to see later on, whether it's, I think the performance of the main Cardassian, right, David Warner?
Yeah, he's been on a lot of Trek.
I think he's very good, and you can kind of see how Dukat and Garak and the guy from Duet and others kind of pick up this very much over-the-top Shakespearean, I was going to say waffling, as opposed to the Klingons that are very much kind of direct and punchy. The verbosity of the Cardassians is something that becomes a staple of their race going forward.
Super dramatic.
And I don't think they really had it before this episode, right? I mean, we had seen Cardassians, but the Cardassians, how they spoke in The Wounded or how they spoke prior is very different to how you see them in Duet or how you see them in The Wire and in the Garak-centric episodes. And maybe it does come down to Garak. Maybe it does come down to Garak and Gold Dukat. But I very much see the main character in this episode being at least a prototype for those guys going forward, given the background of the actor playing opposite Picard. You can see where a lot of this is coming from. And then also the issue regarding family, right? We obviously know about how important family life in Cardassian society is. And actually, I like the fact that they also bring up the issue about the military in Cardassia, about how it was very clear that there was a fragile society that wasn't able to care for itself. The military came in with a bit of an iron fist, and they've kind of been, it sounded like they had been tolerated for keeping the population fed, but at the expense of not really allowing dissent. And you can then see how that would lead to things like, the bad wars and the tragedy of things like the occupation and stuff like that of Bajor. So I like how the description of the society kind of does flow into what we later learn throughout DS9. And you can kind of see, you don't have to retrofit too much stuff here. We're not talking about, I thought Trills had weird things on their heads. Why have these guys got spots? These are completely two different related species. You can see where the Cardassians kind of have been built from, and both in terms of society, in terms of their history, and also in terms of their speech patterns and the like. Anyway, overall, great episodes, great pair of episodes, of course, with last week's. 5 out of 5 from me. I have nothing else to say about this episode.
Okay, then. All right.
However, so I do have a tangent.
Because
2 days ago, Lou, I went to a quiz night, with some colleagues from work, and I'm usually terrible at quizzes. So these are like pub quizzes kind of thing, just general knowledge quizzes. And there was a round on TV and movies, and usually I do terrible on that because I don't watch TV that's any younger than when did Next Generation finish? So I'm not usually very good on this, but this particular quiz had not only a Star Trek question, it had a Star Wars question, a Doctor Who question, and a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy question, all in a 10-question round on TV and film.
Oh.
I will happily let you guys answer if you wish to hear the questions.
Shoot. Absolutely. Do it.
Do it?
Yeah. Tell
okay.
us.
Star Trek first. Now, of course, actually, hang on, I'm saying Star Trek, but that's a bit of a giveaway, because the question was, which vessel has the registry of NCC-1701? And it was said in such a clumsy way. And, I mean, clearly, no one has to be asked twice, right?
No.
Although, we had to do... The quiz was set up where we had to do the marking of the table next to us, and they thought it was Kit from Knight Rider.
Oh, jeez, wow.
Good lord.
Next question is, which villain was played by David Prowse?
Okay, Darth Vader.
Indeed. Or actually, technically, they said, you know, David Prowse played the body and someone else provided the voice, which is even more of a hint in that direction. What was the sequel? Lou, you'll know this one, given you're an Anglophile. Anglophile? You love angles.
I've never touched an angle in my whole life.
Oh, man. Okay.
What was sequel to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Not a clue. I don't even know what the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Okay. I'll leave that one there, people. It's a book, dude.
Yes, yeah, it's the second book in the series, the trilogy in five parts.
Yes.
There you go.
Cool. Do you know it?
He said.
Is it So Long and Thanks for All the Fish?
No, I believe that's the third.
Yeah, I don't know all the names.
Yes.
I've read them all like two times, but
well, I will, when are you next running to Furbob? Because you can ask him for the answer on that one.
Because it's his favorite, yeah.
No, he will know. He will just know. And the other one that they ask is the first actor to play Doctor Who, which I got. No one else on the desk got.
What's his name? Oh, it's escaping me.
Wait a minute, say that again. Ask that again.
The first actor to play Doctor Who. So Doctor Who is a...
Tom?
No.
Tom. Come on.
No, it's Patrick.
It is not.
Not Patrick?
Patrick Troughton, Troughton was second.
Okay. Yeah, that's not right. I can't remember his name.
Tom Baker, wasn't it?
That's four.
Fourth?
Yes.
I love
God,
this.
They must have had Doctor Who in the 50s then.
63.
They had it in 60. It predates Star Trek, Lou.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And actually, I don't know if you know, but, you know, we watch Star Trek. We watch things like The Cage. We watch things, you know, the first season of the original series. And we take it, I mean... I don't, because I'm not entitled. But people might take it for granted that, first of all, A, these things exist, and B, these things are in color. And what they were doing in England at the time is that not only was Doctor Who being produced at the same time, A, it wasn't in color.
True.
And B, a lot of the stuff was thrown out and deleted. So they would prepare the show for broadcast. They would broadcast the show. They would then consider it to be too expensive to keep the original reels of film.
So gone.
So they would flush them.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the Doctor Who episodes, I don't know what the number is, but a while back, it's like around 100 episodes of Doctor Who are missing because the original prints were deleted. So imagine if the first season of Trek just didn't exist.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So what's the actor's name again?
William Hartnell.
Hartnell. Yeah. Right, yes. That's right, couldn't remember.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, I have nothing else of interest.
And now that our listeners have listened to our rousing rundown of Chain of Command Part 2, they should go listen to the Soul Forge podcast.
I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, cue it up, guys.
If they didn't jump over earlier.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hard to keep attention spans these days.
It's true.
Okay, I actually have you on for two more this year.
Nice. What are they?
Starship Mine and The Chase.
Oh, excellent.
I think, Lou, if you use the word this season, it might be more accurate.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I have you on later on in the season of the Next Generation. Not possible. Might be 2019.
2021. I'll be there.
Yeah, 2021. Okay. Yeah.
So.
And next season, which we should have had done. Okay, I don't know if you know this, but one of the things, do you remember, Doc, in that form that I have with all of our ratings?
Oh, yeah.
I had the estimated date of the show and the estimated published date of the show.
Yep.
We're supposed to be done with the series in December of 2019.
Well, I mean, if we go fast.
Yeah, to a week.
2 weeks?
It's path. 2 week? No, it's possible, but I mean, no, I don't think we're gonna make that. So we're not all that incredibly far off.
No, I've told you, I'm off. I'm not working over the summer, so I can do 5 days a week. That's and right. Two on the weekend.
Punch them out.
Oh, for the next 2 months.
Well, yep. Technically not, because I told you. I don't know if I mentioned, but I'm going to Japan in August, so I'm out of the country for the entire month.
You're going to visit a geisha house?
I do not believe so. We are going to go to Disneyland.
Oh, okay. Disneyland in Japan.
In Tokyo, yeah. Disneyland, Tokyo. It's supposed to be a good Disneyland.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I haven't been to California one yet. But we're taking the kids.
Sounds like fun.
Visit Nebraska someday.
Is there a Disneyland there?
There's nothing here.
Corn.
Okay. Yeah, corn. Well, or you can go to Adventureland in Des Moines. We'll meet you there.
Sounds great.
Yes, it's fun.
A miracle turns a fictional character into real live flesh and blood.
As far as I can tell, he's real.
According to the laws of physics, this is impossible.
But this new life form possesses a criminal mind.
I'm afraid I had no choice but to take control of your vessel.
And his ruthless power puts the entire ship in jeopardy.
Unless we move to a safe distance, this vessel will be destroyed.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Okay, everyone, join us next time as we review episode 12. It's called Ship in a Bottle. And we're supposed to have Colin on for that one. So, everyone take care, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.